Children should be seen and not heard. Now, that might sound old school these days, but there was a time when it was pretty standard educational philosophy. Nowadays, it's more fashionable to think of schools as boisterous, noisy kinds of places. But have we lost touch with what a little silence can do? My next guest thinks so, but she also believes there's an alternative to the punitive, enforced silence of old. Helen Lees is a senior lecturer in education at Newman University in Birmingham in the UK. She's the author of Silence in Schools. Now, Helen, first of all, tell me, how and why did you become interested in silence?
If I think back, one day my mum said to me, hey, would you like to meet my friend who teaches meditation and he can tell you how to do it? And I said, all right. And so that's what happened. I think it took about 15 minutes and he said, do this, do that. And then I think I was being bullied at school a little bit. And I used to go home after school and sit and do this meditation thing. And I found that it was working somehow to help me deal with what was going on. But then I lost touch with it. And later in my 20s, I re-engaged with that practice and really got into it.
Well, when and why did you start thinking about the importance of silence in schools?
Well, in my 20s, I got into silence. I enjoyed it. So I spent a very silent time and I wanted to be an artist. But as we know, artists struggle to make money. So I decided to train as a teacher and I went into a school and I was just shocked by how noisy the environment was. But not just that, the pace was so frenetic. I thought, whoa, this can't be right. This isn't human. And I looked for a silent space in the school. I struggled to find one. And I ended up in a windowless office at lunchtime, just trying to sit there and recover, really, from the noise and the pace. So it was then, in that teacher training experience in that school, that I thought, there's work to be done. This needs to be said. We need silence in schools.
Well, now, contrary to that, if I think about an old-fashioned sort of a school, I do think of it as being very quiet. But you argue that that kind of, you know, children should be seen and not heard, that kind of enforced silence is not the same as the kind you're advocating. So tell me more.
Well, as a teacher post-2000, I can tell you that schools are not that quiet. I think we've moved on from this rigorous enforced silence and children are allowed much more expression in school environments, but still the dynamic is of authority and the teacher is in charge and when the teacher speaks, the children have to be quiet. But of course, what happens is because they're constantly forced to be silent, when they're not being forced, they're very noisy. There's not a sort of a natural balance about it. And when I've gone into environments where silence is an integral part of the ethos of the school, the atmosphere is much calmer. There is noise, there is laughter, sometimes there might even be the odd bit of shouting. What's wrong with that? Nothing. But as a whole, it's a calmer environment.
Well, the kind of silence I think you're interested in, you call strong silence?
Yes. Through looking at a wide variety of writing on silence, I realised it's, as one person calls it, a very slippery concept. So I said the good kind is strong enough to bring forth benefits and the bad kind, the enforced silence, the one we don't want, that's weak.
What are some examples of this strong silence that could be used in schools or indeed in daily life?
Yes, and there's lots of examples because people have natural access to silence. It's an integral part of our lives. So accessing silence in school environments is very diverse. One example is a teacher who decides quite simply she's going to set the work and then she's going to walk out the room. So that's very simple. Then another teacher decided that instead of asking a question and very quickly saying, come on, anyone got an answer? Okay, the answer is, she would pause and she would create a silence and wait until the students were ready to answer. And that's a really nice one. The other day with some students in the university, I said, shall we go for a silent walk? Now, the thing about these experiences is, in order for them to be strong, positive, what's required between the teacher and the students is a very different kind of relationship. You have to get consent for strong silence. So you have to ask, and you have to get agreement that this is going to happen. Because being in silence, especially when you're in silence in an agreed way with other people, is a very intense experience. And you can't just do that to, well, you wouldn't be able to do it to people through enforcement. And so when I've taken the students out on these silent walks, we are together in that silence. And of course, that togetherness is because we've got that agreement.
Well, with that first example, though, you gave of strong silence, of the teacher setting the work and then walking out of the classroom, I mean, I immediately imagine the kids in that class just running riot.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about this presence of silence. It's as though somebody is there. So if the teacher introduces the idea that the students can work in silence if they want to, then what has happened is the students have agreed to work in silence. And if there was a student that didn't want to work in silence, all the other students who do want to, they say, oh, go on, please don't talk over what we're choosing. So, of course, everyone ends up silently. And the teacher has set up this environment and the students have agreed to enter into it. So it doesn't matter really whether they're there or not. The students are the ones in control of the silence.
You're listening to Life Matters with the author of Silence in Schools, Helen Lees. I'm Amanda Smith, and Helen joins us from the UK. Now, advocating for this kind of silence in schools, Helen, when the philosophy for so long has been about expressing yourself, it is kind of radical.
Well, the reason why it's radical is because it changes the dynamic between the teachers and the students. We're very used to schools being about teachers having authority over students and students needing to do as they're told. What happens with silence as some kind of inclusion in the school? It might be that they do meditation exercises or mindfulness. It might be that there's a room somewhere in the school that the students and staff can go to just to be quiet and still. But those inclusions in schools mean that, as the research that I did for my book showed, that the atmosphere becomes softened and the sorts of authority that which control and discipline the behaviour of young people are not so required. The interesting thing for me when I was doing the research for the book was how much those people who do use silence regularly in schools say they need to talk about it. It's ironic, but silence needs managing. It's not a given. You don't say, right, come on then, everybody, let's have silence. Yeah, agreed, okay. And then it's there forever. Every day there's a need to work with it, to be with it. And very much it's like having a relationship with a person. So a school would have a relationship with silence and they would take care of it by talking about it.
And what does the research then say about the benefits of silence for learning?
Now what we're finding is that there's much more of the sort of the hard science clinical trial type studies. Those are focusing on well-being, things like looking at ADHD, and they show that the children respond better to a learning environment if they've been given an opportunity to have a regular silence. And that's a very important point, actually. It's cumulative silence that matters. And so the studies where silence experiences using techniques such as meditation or mindfulness or other non-techniques such as pausing or having a sanctuary space, they show that the students are feeling more at ease in the environment. They are getting on better with each other, particularly students who struggle with their social skills, perhaps. The tolerance of the other is improved. And overall, the studies that we have of the more sort of scientific clinical style rather than these qualitative considerations of how silence interacts with students, they suggest that the stress levels are reduced. And those studies are also being done with teachers. So teachers are very stressed in schools. The pressure in schools is very high. And that's really where silence is benefiting most. Just this general decrease in stress and an introduction of more calm.
Well, you've said that learning to use silence isn't easy. How do you train for it?
It's a good question, because making the mind quieter is a big job. Anyone that's tried meditation or mindfulness for the first time will say, "Whoa, I had no idea my mind was so random or so busy, and I can't control it." And it comes as a surprise to them to meet their mind for the first time. But it's regular practice that's very important. At a certain point, the mind notices what quiet is, or silence, what that sort of experience looks and feels like. And as soon as a person has had, you could call it an anchor experience, then they remember, "Whoa, that was nice, and I'd like that again," and then they can go back to it. So it's about trying through consent to introduce this benefit, this good thing, so that somebody can get a taste for it. And it seems that young people really, they report that they like trying it. So that's great. I would never say, you've got this long process of negotiation to introduce silence into schools. You can definitely bring it in, but you have to talk about it as something that people can take up if they want to.
Helen, as well as being an academic researcher, you also have a consulting practice, and you have actually just released a new app to help people find silence.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that, actually, because it's so nice to... It's called Calm Me Down, and I made it because I thought it would be great to have a frame for silence. It's hard to discipline yourself into sitting quietly and doing that every day. So, I mean, there's lots of meditation and mindfulness apps, but actually silence with this consensual philosophy, it needs to operate in a particular way.
Does it have sound?
It's extremely simple. So the person chooses the time, say press the 3-minute option, and then it says, "Think, where are you?" And then there's a timer, quickly it goes to the next screen. And then it says, "Okay, get comfortable," and so on and so forth. And then it says, "Okay, notice your breathing." And so for a timed experience, we notice our breathing, and that's so simple to do. And it's, of course, for everybody right now, it's cost free. We just watch our breath. And then the timer finishes, it goes through to the next screen, and it says, "Sit still." Again, this is cost free. We don't need to buy an app to sit still. And the timer goes around, and then at the end there's a little trophy button. You press the trophy and it says, "On your way to calm." The point of the app is to make that framed so that people can use it as a way to discipline themselves into a set experience.
Well, Helen, I applaud you. I applaud you with the sound of one hand clapping. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Helen Lees is a senior lecturer in education at Newman University in Birmingham in the UK, and she's the author of Silence in Schools. She also has a silence consulting practice and this new app, and links will be on the Life Matters program page, as well as some tips from Helen about how to access silence in your life.